Nelson, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome
to Utopia.
What's up, everybody? Hope you're doing great. Hope you're having a great Tuesday. If that's when you're listening to this, that's when I'm recording this. It's a Tuesday mailbag edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. I am Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. weekdays on the Odyssey app, on the radio, on YouTube, on Twitch. You guys know the drill. Got my D'Amico Ryan's Iron Sharpens Iron t-shirt on. I am ready to go. 2-0 Houston Texans. We're loving this. When I started this podcast, the Texans were just a cute little team that won three games in an entire season. Now we are 5 days away from the Texans having three wins this season. This is fun. This is a whole lot of fun. So we got a lot to get to. I have a huge mailbag today. I've got, I don't know, probably maybe almost double the normal number of questions, which would stand to reason because I'm getting about double the normal number of emails because this team is way more than double the quality of team that they were a few years ago when I started this bad boy. So we'll get to the mailbag in just a second. The administrative stuff off the top. If you are new to the podcast or you've not yet subscribed to the podcast, it costs nothing to subscribe. All it does is just however much time it takes for you to go boop and hit a button on your phone. That would be great. Then you get the podcast automatically. When you give it a rating and review, that helps as well, especially good ones. So I appreciate you guys. I appreciate all of you listening and especially the regulars, in particular, the ones that email. Love the kind words. Love any words, honestly, any feedback. I'm not somebody who's just out here just seeking for you guys to drink Kool-Aid and tell me how awesome the podcast is. If there's stuff you want to see or that you think we can do better, just let me know. And today is a mailbag episode. A reminder that the mailbag address is houmailbag@gmail.com. houmailbag@gmail.com. Typically, I read the mailbag over the weekend. So if you send some in before the game, obviously, like before the Vikings game, let's say, there's nothing leading up to the Viking game about that game in particular. It's going to get addressed in a mailbag. Anything about a specific game, send in after the game. But if you have just general Texans questions throughout the week or something that you think evergreen's just fine that's not game-specific about the team that we can use next Tuesday, send it in. houmailbag@gmail.com. I don't know that there's much stuff to get to off the top with the Texans. The only real news, I guess we'll get an injury report tomorrow. I would say the big injury news we're waiting to see on is Joe Mixon. What the deal is with his ankle, which was injured by a possible hip drop tackle in the Bears game on Sunday night. So we'll have to wait and see. Mixon came back into the game, gave it a go, and as we know, he ended up getting pulled back out of the game, highlighted by Cam Akers fumbling inside the 5-yard line. So that'll be an interesting thing to see because Mixon could be on the injury. I think Mixon will be on the injury report in some fashion. We'll just see. I can't imagine that he won't be limited in practice at best. And I don't know. That was a pretty severe spraining of the ankle. And I could see going back in the game just because on adrenaline. But I bet that thing hurt on Monday and today. So I'd be shocked if he's not at the very least limited in practice, if not out of practice, which then brings you to Damian Pierce and his hamstring injury. How is that doing? We'll see. It feels like Cam Akers has a shorter leash than everybody else, just based on him still playing in the fourth quarter of the last preseason game. The fumble probably didn't help. If there's no Pierce and there's no Mixon, we might get our first look at British Brooks getting some carries. Who knows? They see Dare as reliable. You can tell Dare's never going to do any. Dare's never going to break a long one. But I think they view Dare as somebody who's not going to fumble, knows the playbook. So we'll see. But no Mixon could be a big problem. No Mixon, no Pierce is just a problem from a depth standpoint. So we'll have to wait and see on that. And I guess we're also waiting to see if Azeez Al-Shaair gets any sort of punishment from the league for socking that bear in the face with a closed fist. I can't imagine he's going to get suspended. I would be shocked if he didn't get a fine. So we're waiting on that as well. I would guess that we're going to get a little more hardware this week. Joe Mixon, of course, got AFC Offensive Player of the Week last week. I would be mildly surprised, without having looked and seen what all the other special teamers have done throughout the AFC, I would be really surprised if Kyme Fairbairn's not the AFC Special Teams Player of the Week this week. He made history. I mean, the no player has ever kicked 5 50-yard field goals in a 2-week period. He's kicked 6, and they were both games were close games that they don't win without those field goals. The second game was a nationally televised game on Sunday where they made a big deal out of Kyme. So I'd be surprised if Kyme didn't take home AFC Special Teams Player of the Week this week. As far as other Texan stuff goes, if you guys listen to Payne and Pendergast, you know on Tuesdays at 9 o'clock, we power rank the power rankings. We tell you which power rankings are doing the best job of power ranking the Houston Texans. And turns out they're all doing a pretty damn good job. The 5 power rankings we use are ESPN, CBS, The Athletic, SI.com, and NFL.com. And all 5 of those outlets have the Texans either 4th or 3rd in their power rankings. Generally speaking, Kansas City's number 1 still in everybody's power rankings, and they will be until they lose, I would imagine. The other teams that are kind of in that lofty stratosphere with the Texans, the Buffalo Bills are very high up in a lot of them. People still believe in the 49ers, even though they lost to the Vikings last week. A lot of people still believe in the Lions, even though they lost to Tampa Bay. This just in, teams do lose during the regular season in the NFL. But I'm really enthusiastic about the Texans, man. I feel like they have not given – I feel like they've not put forth their best game yet. Not even really close, honestly. I thought in the Colts game they looked rusty in the first half offensively, and I thought that the defense giving up those big chunk plays obviously is not ideal. A block punt, you never see that happen with a Texan special teams unit, and they won that game. Probably should have won by more than they did. Similarly, I thought they should have won by more against Chicago. If Cam Akers punches that ball in instead of fumbling it, they probably win by 16 points instead. And they win by 16 points, by the way, while committing 12 penalties. So this is a really good football team, and I think the defense is opening the eyes of a lot of people around the country. Greg Tuohy, who is Colin Cowherd's producer, who's a Houstonian, lives in L.A. now, obviously, but he's a Houstonian who listens to the station. I don't know if he listens to the podcast or not. There's only so much stuff you can listen to, but he's a friend. He texted me just now. Cowherd's got the Texans at number 2, which is hysterical because less than 2 years ago, they had a weird owner, and they – we're trying to do a Zoom call with Sean Payton, the nerve of the Texans, to do a Zoom call with somebody. So it was funny that you couldn't get Cowherd to say anything nice about the Texans. Not that they deserved it necessarily, but he was so anti-Texan a few years ago. I thought some of the things unfairly so, some fair. But now, number 2 behind the Kansas City Chiefs. So I say all this to say, I'm assuming if you listen to this podcast, you're a Texan fan. People really like your squad, people. Our squad. People, I remind you that iron sharpens iron. All right. Let's get it going with the pod. We're with the podcast, with the mailbag here, and get right to it. We'll, just as a reminder, later this week, the Thursday episode will be the preview of the Vikings game. I'm really looking forward to previewing that game. There's some super intrigue on both sides with, you know, with Stingley and Justin Jefferson matching up, and with former Vikings on this team and with former Texans on the Vikings squad. I mean, this is and both teams being 2-0, like this is a really, really intriguing and fun matchup in Minnesota on Sunday. Should be a whole lot of fun. All right, let's get into the mailbag. Ryan Lynn, you're up first. If Mixon misses any time with his ankle injury, how do you see the running back timeshare going? Is Akers the number 2 or Pierce? I kind of just touched on that. I think if, let's pretend that Damian's okay to play on Sunday, but Mixon is not, I think it'd probably be a pretty even mix between those two, between Pierce and with Akers. Dare, I think, is off to the side. I think Dare is a not break glass in case of emergency. But I think Dare gets a few snaps. But as far as like the conventional running back who's getting it on 1st and 10, 2nd and 5, things like that, I think they split it down the middle and you see who the hot hand is. Akers has to hold on to the football. That's the big thing. Akers had fumble issues when he was a Los Angeles Ram. So I think it's a 50-50 kind of thing. If Pierce isn't out, if Pierce is out too, I mean, we got to factor that in. If Pierce is out, then kind of all hell breaks loose a little bit. I think you probably do see some British Brooks in there, which I think would be super intriguing. You know, I know it's the preseason, but that he looked good in the preseason. In that last game where he scored two touchdowns, I was impressed with the way he kind of got to the corner and then turned it upfield. So we'll see. Brooks got fined for his hit in the in which game was it that he got the hit? I can't remember. I think it was the opener against Indianapolis. Yeah, he got fined for that. What the hell, man? Well, like $4,000, but still, dude's an undrafted free agent ripping $4,000 out of his pocket. Go to hell, NFL. So I think that's how it goes, Ryan, on the running back front. Rick Tindall, good friend, emails the show. I'm trying to gauge why the Texans didn't cover the spread and struggled to score in the second half. Let me pause right there. Rick, are you a gambler? I didn't know that. I've known Rick Tindall for a while. Trying to gauge why the Texans didn't cover the spread. Do you have a vested interest in them not covering the spread, Rick? Is this because this opens up a whole new avenue in our friendship? If you were as worried as many were about them, I didn't bet on the game, but that's interesting. Is it an overstatement to say Chicago's defense is very good? They seem to bring an intensity that was only exceeded by our defense, especially our defensive line. I think those are two of the best defenses potentially in the NFL that we watched on Sunday. The Texans were already, even last season, even though there's certain things they didn't do well, they weren't great against the pass. Their tackling was poor. Statistically, that was still a good defense last year. They were, I think they were 12th in overall defense last year, the Texans were. So it was good. It wasn't great. It was good. This has the potential, I think, to be a great defense. And they get DeNico Autry and Christian Harris back in the next month or so. So that's almost like picking up a couple of free agents. So, yes, I think Chicago's defense is very good. Very good. So I'm not overly concerned about the Texans scoring just 19 points. Again, if Cam Akers holds on to the football, they probably scored 26 points in that game. And keep in mind, the composition of the 26 points includes a bunch of 50-yard field goals. So they've spent a lot of time in opposing territory this season. It's just they need to – the issue this year isn't so much the red zone as it is kind of like the next zone, like the pink zone or whatever. Penalties. I mean, to answer your question, Rick, like why didn't they cover the spread and why did they struggle to score in the second half? The Bears have a very good defense. The Texans last year, even when their offense was very good, would go through lulls. I think that's what happened. CJ said it after the game, just one of those nights, and they couldn't get out of their own way. They had penalties at the worst possible times on both sides of the football. So that's all. I am overall encouraged by the first two games because I feel like there's an attainable higher level for this football team. That's very, and the issues are very fixable. You know what I mean? I'm not concerned. I'm frustrated. I'm not concerned. There's a difference between the two. Concern is more of a long-term thing. Frustration is more short-term. I am frustrated with the Texans from that standpoint that they could, you know, these games didn't have to be close, but they won. All right, let's keep going. Glenn Childs emails in. For everything Laremy Tunsil brings to the table with his high-level blocking skills, he often negates that with his constant false starts. I can't disagree with that. Mental errors like that should be easily rectified by someone at his supposed elite level, but they've been a constant problem since day one. In training camp, DeMeco had O-linemen that false started run a lap around the field. At this point, Tunsil should have to run one around the perimeter of Beltway 8. So I don't know that that's a question or more just Glenn venting about Laremy Tunsil, but here's what I'll say. Well, Laremy never had to run laps in training camp because he never practiced in training camp. That's an easy way to avoid having to run laps a false start is to never or rarely line up in training camp. But yeah, they did that a lot this year. I remember seeing Kenyon Green running a lap and a few others running a lap from time to time. It's hot out there. That's a good incentive to hold your water along the offensive line. I'm not going to sit here and say it's unacceptable that Laremy Tunsil gets false starts. Like it happens in football. It happens with Laremy way more than it should. And the balance sheet on Laremy Tunsil is largely positive, or else they wouldn't be paying him the money that they are. My whole thing with Laremy is Laremy himself likes to fancy that he's the best left tackle in football. Like he's I think he's very keen to what's said on social media. Go look at the pinned tweet on his Twitter account, and it's him referencing somebody saying that he's a very good starting tackle as opposed to saying he's elite, I guess. Laramie's somebody who hears the noise about his level of play. Laramie's somebody who notices what other guys are getting paid. Laramie does not live in a cocoon. He doesn't have tunnel vision. He hears everything. So if you hear everything and you're going to take umbrage with some of the things that get said, then yeah, you can't have two false starts every game. That's not elite. You're very good. You're very good. That's an issue. And they come at really bad times. There's never a good time for a 5-yard penalty, but there's better times than others. First and 10, 5-yard penalty. Now it's first and 15. You got CJ Stroud as your quarterback. Okay. That's not super damaging. But when you turn 3rd and 4 into 3rd and 9, when you turn a 54-yard field goal into a 59-yard field goal, that happened on Sunday night. Then you can't sit here and take issue with people who say that Trent Williams is better than you or this left tackle or that left tackle are better than you. I mean, you can. It just looks a little silly. That's all. Glenn, thanks for the email. I don't even know if you were looking for me to say anything or answer anything about Laramie, but appreciate the email. Brian's in Iowa. Let me start by saying that we're blessed that we don't have bigger issues to talk about. Major injuries, losses, a competitive division. That being said, please talk me off the ledge with the penalties. It's exhausting watching games. We could have won by 20 if we had not nullified plays with a penalty. Interceptions coming back, holding, forcing 3rd and long. Laramie gets mentioned again here by Brian. I'm happy to have a squad where we have room to allow these, but can we sharpen that iron? As my kids would say, bruh, he's got a face emoji like this, the hand over face emoji. Thanks for letting me vent. Go Texans. They're not going to have 12 penalties every game. I wish I had a better answer for you, Brian, than it's the NFL. But that's kind of my answer, is they've just got to be more disciplined about it. I don't know that there's a drill you can work on where this will prevent Titus Howard from having a stupid hands in the face penalty. He just can't get a hands to the face penalty. There's nothing embarrassing him in the film room. Maybe, I would say negative reinforcement works with some people, the fear of being called out in front of your peers. So maybe that. I'm not in the building though. So D'Amico may do some of that already. I'm not sure. But yeah, it's frustrating. It's frustrating. It's also just stressful, appreciate the email, Brian. Hope things are good in Iowa. Tell Kirk Ferentz I said he's a disease on the face of college football. Okay. 9 points a game or whatever they score. I hate Iowa football. BK, dear opening voice for the Texans hype video. Hell yeah. Okay, it wasn't the hype video. First of all, I'm sorry, BK. I'm about to well actually you when you're just giving me props. It was for those who don't know what he's talking about. The Texans have been doing this for the last couple of years now. This year they're calling it cinematic, I think. Maybe they called it that last year. And I think they only do it after wins. So we'll get one this week. But after wins, the content team puts together like a 6-minute cut up of the game. But it's done in a super dramatic, cinematic fashion. And more often than not, my voice ends up on it, especially at the beginning, because they'll take the audio from the pregame show where I'm introducing I'm kind of bringing the audience in. Good morning, everyone, and welcome, blah, blah, blah. So more often than not, my voice finds its way onto there. If you go find the one for the Colts game, it's on there. So I've noticed that, so I really try to make the opens pop now, so I make it onto the video. I'll tell you guys that on this podcast here. I'm not going to admit that publicly. Oh, wait, that's right. This podcast is public. But yeah, man, it's cool getting your voice on stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's fun. Like, especially when all the other voices are guys like Mark Vandermeer and Andre Ware and people who I have great respect for and who honestly are, trained to do this stuff. I'm not trained to do any of this stuff. It's a caller to the Jim Rome show, man. So BK has an actual email too. He wants me to read. I don't think he sent this in just so I would masturbate here on the podcast for all of you about how awesome my voice is in the open of the Texans cinematic videos. He says this: AFC South teams have shown less fight than Zach and Slater in the infamous scuffle heard round Bayside High. We have a 2-0 record and haven't played well. That's number one. I saw that video with Zach and Slater. It popped up on my timeline this week. And they were, if you remember, in Saved by the Bell, that is, they were fighting over some new girl at school. And I don't recall the full episode, but I remember the fight. We all remember where we were when Zach and Slater threw down in the hallway at school. And it was just a reminder, and I reminded everybody, particularly young men out there, that the female genitalia is undefeated among heterosexual males. So that was a reminder of that. Zach and Slater, good friends, better enemies. All right, that's number one. Yeah, and BK, yes, the AFC South sucks right now. You know who said they suck? Trevor Lawrence. He was asked about the Jags offense. He's like, well, we suck right now. I'm glad you finally admitted, Trevor. And by the way, Jags, Trevor Bank Stadium, really? Stupid. It's dumb. Number two, I do not know where we got Mario Edwards from, but I very much want more. Shout out to the Southside sack dance. The whole Texans defense put out the vibe that Baltimore used to, that you know whoever they play the next day. The opponent's offense is still feeling it. Swarm is leading to some aches and swelling. That's 100% true. And that's a goal with D'Amico Ryans. I don't know if it's a stated goal or if it's a measurable or quantifiable goal, but I do know that D'Amico probably takes great joy in the Texans opponent needing massages, cold tubs, Bengay, whatever other remedies you have for feeling like shit the day after you play the Texans. Number three, this is from BK. Nico Collins and Andre Johnson have never been seen in the same place together. Could it be? Seriously, though, number 12 ain't got time for the finger in his face. He's about to run you over, then toss you off in the end zone. Worth every penny. I loved that. I wanted that penalty on Nico, which made it like second and 23 or 24, whatever it was the very last play of the first half. And I forget who I was sitting next to in the press box. I said, they need to go right to Nico on this play. Like, Nico is hyped. And they did the very first play. You could see it coming, man. And that slant and the way he tossed Jalen Johnson when he got into the end zone, Nico Collins is a certified beast, man. He is awesome. And he couldn't be a nicer, more soft-spoken guy in like post-game show and in real life. But man, you hit that switch on Nico, look the hell out. Number four, I've never been more wrong about anything as I was about the Kikuchi trade. That's BK saying that. Yeah, me neither. You and millions of other people. Been a great trade. Dana Brown deserves a ton of credit, man. A ton of credit. All right, let's keep it moving. Charles Honeycutt, is there a concern with CJ's connection with Tank right now? Diggs seems more like a possession receiver at times for us. Nico continues to impress. I'm not worried about Tank. I was at enough practices. I watched the preseason. There's nothing wrong with Tank physically. Tank still moves like Tank. It's just, this is what CJ warned us about. I don't know, warning maybe too strong a word, but this is what CJ kind of forecasted for us in the preseason, which is, you know, some guys are going to have big games and other guys won't. And then there will be weeks down the line where it flips, you know, and now it's Tank's Saturday to go do things. Now, it's been extreme and the Bears made it extreme. I wouldn't take anything that happened on Sunday in the Bears game from a productivity standpoint offensively and apply it as something that's going to be the norm moving forward. That's a really good defense, and that's a really, really good secondary, particularly the corners. So I think sometimes certain, you know, games take on a certain culture to them. They, you know, specific games take on a certain feel or a vibe. That game had a hard-hitting defensive feel to it. So, no, Tank's fine. I wouldn't be worried about Tank. Dave in Round Rock, I hope this doesn't sound blasphemous, but watching Nico Collins is reminding me of watching Andre Johnson. Not just great catches, clutch catches, trucking dudes after the catch. Could we be so blessed? Dave, I hope it's not blasphemous either, because now you and BK have both invoked it in the last 3 minutes. Okay? So I hope it's not blasphemous as well. Because, hey, gods, if you're listening, football gods, I'm just the vessel to read these emails of these blasphemous people. I don't want you shooting lightning down on the Utopia Football Podcast. We got a lot of growing to do, man. Zach, love the show. You get right to the point and give us great insight. Well, thanks, Zach. Let's sit and talk about that for a little while. Let's take a break and talk about me and how I get to the point on things. I'm just being ironic. Sorry. When you were doing stock up, stock down on Monday, this is Zach emailing you, and you highlighted Cade Stover and Kamari Lassiter. That reminded me that one of the most refreshing things about the coaching staff is that D'Amico puts the best players on the field, even if they are rookies. Bill O'Brien seemed to think everyone needed one or more redshirt years like the days when the NCAA didn't allow freshmen to play. That was a weird thing with Bill O'Brien and rookies. And that was, I think that was a byproduct of being a Belichick guy and feeling like you needed to be grumpy and gruff and blustery all the time. And rookies don't know anything. And I've never understood that. I've never understood like it's a fraternity and we're hazing these guys like they're freshmen or something like that. That's what's so refreshing about, like, Kamari Lassiter comes in. He's clearly the second best cornerback. So he gets put in there. He's a starter. He doesn't get treated like a rookie, you know? So yeah, I the best guy is going to play, and that's how it should be. And I think Nick is that way. I definitely think D'Amico is that way. Keep in mind, D'Amico was a starter like a week into his rookie year in training camp. Seth was on that team, you know, so he talked about how you could tell right away D'Amico Ryans belonged on the field, and he got on the field. So yeah, I'm with you there. France in the North is next. France in the North. I'll see you at the Bills game. France and his family are coming in from Canada, and they've never been to a Texans game. He's a huge Texans fan who's never been to a Texans game before. So that's going to be a whole lot of fun. So if you see him, I wish I could get merch between now and then, because then I could get you guys that are that listen to this podcast to kind of rep out there. You know what I mean? I got to do that. Here's France in the North's question. Two games in and Tank Dell hasn't seemed like himself. Do you believe it's crowded offensive weapons and he just isn't getting his touches, or do you think it's the way he's been utilized so far? I think I kind of nailed the Tank thing down. I just think it'll be his turn eventually. Now, some of it's on Tank. You know, Tank, there are two plays that if CJ hits them, then Tank's numbers look totally different this year. If CJ in the Colts game puts it on Tank on that crosser into the end zone, where I forget which DB it was for the Colts, kind of reached up and knocked it away. If CJ throws a normal CJ pass on that play, Tank scores a touchdown. Similarly, Tank has to catch that crosser that CJ threw to him on Sunday against the Bears, hit him in the hands. So, I mean, you're talking about a touchdown. I don't remember what the yardage was there, but it was, you know, it was a, I'm guessing like a, you know, decent chunk play. And then, you know, if Tank catches the one on Sunday against the Bears, he might be off to the races. So the numbers look real different with just those two plays. That's why I'm not worried about Tank. He's getting open. They're moving the ball through the air. I think he's going to be fine. France in the North says, between Petrie and Toa Toa, who do you believe has gained the most confidence back in comparison to last year? Easily Toa Toa between those two. I don't know that Petrie ever loses confidence. I think at times he loses his head sometimes, he gets overly aggressive at times. That's something he's had to work on, is controlling his aggression. I don't think confidence is ever an issue with Jalen Petrie. Whereas last year, I think with Toa Toa, it might've been. Toa Toa kind of changed his body type this year too. So I think, to me, it's easily Toa Toa, and that's been a revelation. Like, if there's a silver lining to Christian Harris being out, it's that we're getting a good look at Toa Toa, who's played well so far this year. Had a really good PFF grade this week, if I'm not mistaken. So did Petrie. Over under on Tunsil false start penalties next week at 2.5. I'll go under. I don't think he's going to get 3. Well, actually, I'm just not going to play it. He might get 3. You never know. All right, Austin emails in, says, 2-year listener of the podcast. Love what you bring and appreciate you pumping it out each week. I've got two questions, one fun, one serious. This game gave me heart palpitations. I needed to go to the hospital and get checked every time I watch this team play. Let me pause right there. That is true. D'Amico has now coached 19 regular season games. 12 of them have come down to the last minute or so. You know, one score, last minute. And he's 9-3 in those games. Like, so on the one hand, they've gotten really good at closing the deal in those games. You know, on the other hand, you know, but the three that they've lost are all last second field goals. They lost to the Falcons on a last second field goal. They lost to the Panthers, I believe, on a last second field goal. And then they had the last second attempt to tie the Jacksonville game, hit the crossbar from 58 yards. Now, that was not Kyahmi Fairbairn. Had it been Kyahmi Fairbairn, I think it would have gone through. You know how I know that? He kicked a 59-yarder on Sunday. That's what I choose to believe. All right, here are Austin's questions. First off, does the world finally recognize Nico as a wide receiver one after the start to the season? How many wide receivers are you placing above Nico Collins right now? I would say right now, and I'm not basing this on the seasons all of them have had so far. You know, like there's been, well, passing's been down in general. Nico is leading the league in yardage right now, in receiving yardage. So, yes, he is an elite number one receiver. Now, you know, comparing him to Andre Johnson opens up a whole new ball of wax because Andre's a Hall of Famer. And when you do that, then people are like, oh, so you're saying Nico's going to be a Hall of Famer? No, but I think stylistically, I think there's a lot of similarities between Nico and Andre Johnson, both in their meticulousness along with the physical tools. So I think it's just really cool for Nico that he's got Andre as a resource here. I think that's just, that is just a badass. As far as wide receivers I place above Nico Collins right now, Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, Jamar Chase, Tyreek Hill for sure right now. But I'd have to think, like, I'm just kind of in my head going through all the teams and thinking of who the receivers are on the various teams. Like, definitely in the division, I take him ahead of anybody that's on any of the teams in the division. AFC North, I mentioned Chase. AFC East, I mentioned Tyreek Hill. He's better than anybody on Kansas City, the Chargers, the Broncos, the Raiders. Well, Devontae Adams. So let's say Devontae Adams, that's five. You know, I think I have Nico ahead of AJ Brown. So yeah, he's like top six or seven. I don't want to bore the audience with me just sitting here rummaging through who the teams are in my head. Nico is easily a top 10 receiver and he's knocking on the door of top five. And you've got Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell and Dalton Schultz and Joe Mixon when he's got two working ankles. It's such a good time to be a Texan fan. Second question revolves around the O-line. This is Austin's questions here. They seem to struggle in this game. There's obviously a couple different reasons. I wanted to see which you thought had the biggest impact on the game. No juice at center. Bears went after Jared Patterson. That's his first hypothesis. Number two, Bears defense is just that good. Number three, momentum killing flags kept the offense on the field longer than needed. I think it's all those things. You know, I think Juice Scruggs is his starting center for a reason. I don't think if they have Juice Scruggs out there, I don't think all of a sudden they're running for 4.2 yards per carry. That is, it's probably more number two, the Bears being really good, than number one. You know, the flags kill everybody, but I would say mostly it's the Bears are really good. That's a good defense. He says, Austin says, side note, I'm calling it now, Locksmith for Defensive Rookie of the Year. That would be Kamari Lassiter. You know who's rooting for that? Seth C. Payne. Got a 40-1 ticket on Kamari Lassiter for Defensive Rookie of the Year. How about that? Kamari's allowed, this is off the top of my head, in two games when they've targeted Kamari, he's the opposing quarterbacks have gone 3-for-10 for 28 yards and an interception. Pretty damn good. All right. A few more here. Bruce in Cypress. Dear Sean, I'm planning a trip to Nashville to watch the Texans and Titans in Week 18. The game time is still TBD. Do you see any reason why this game would not be played on January 5th at noon? Unless it's a situation like last year where the Colts and the Texans were both fighting for a playoff spot, the winner gets in, the loser goes home. They put that one on Saturday instead of Sunday, and they put it in primetime. You know, then yeah, like that would be the scenario. I personally think the Titans are one of the six worst teams in football, so I don't see that happening. So I think you're safe booking your travel plans. Now, here's the thing, Bruce. All right, if it turns out the Titans are good, I don't want you coming at me with your receipts saying that I owe you for your flight and your hotel. I'm just giving you my educated advice, but. The old warning, Pendergast advice does not guarantee future correctness. Okay. Wants to book everything. I don't want to book anything until I'm sure when the game will be played. Here's the thing though. Like we didn't know that Colts Texans game was going to be primetime till like a week before. So, you know, you sometimes you just got to jump in the pool, man. You can't wait for the water to cool off or warm or cool down or whatever. You got to just jump in the pool. I don't think the Titans will pose a postseason threat, and hopefully the Texans have a first-round bye sewn up by them, and there's no reason to flex this game. I love the enthusiasm of Texan fans. Can you imagine 2 years ago writing that sentence about the Texans? I hope they have a first-round bye. First-round bye sewn up by then. You know only one team gets a first-round bye, and they're in the same conference as the Chiefs. Now, the Chiefs were not that team last year. It was the Baltimore Ravens had the first-round bye, if I'm not mistaken. But I love that. Yeah, Bruce, book your stuff to Nashville. The Titans suck. John Burnett, what's your take on the Dez King situation? As of now, he's been signed, cut, and now re-signed. I think the Texans like Dez King. I don't think they love Dez King. I think they like the idea of having him hanging around in case they need some depth at cornerback. And I think Dez is at a stage in his career where I don't know that there's a ton of people knocking down his door. The Steelers picked him up last year when the Texans let him go, and the Steelers cut him, you know, midway through the season. I don't know what the issues are with Dez behind the scenes, to where, you know, he's not viewed as, you know, he's not viewed as essential, but he's still valuable. You know, he can return punts, and he's at times a solid enough cornerback. I just think there's certain guys that get into a stage of their career where teams don't go out of their way to pick them up, but they have a relationship with a certain team. In this case, Dez has a relationship with the Texans. And my guess is the teams tell some of these guys, like, man, just stay in shape, stay ready. Now, Dez is on the team. He's on the practice squad. He's not on the team, but he's on the practice squad. But I think there's a lot of guys like that. They get cut in training camp, but they just keep an apartment near the team they were in training camp with, and they just, you know, get a membership at Lifetime Fitness or whatever and wait for that phone call. All right. A couple more. Joe Q is back. Joe Q, I got this email and your three other emails, and I love your emails, Joe. I just want you to know I can't reply to all of them. I want you to know I got them. Joe Q is great. Two playoff teams from last year, Green Bay and Miami, have lost quarterbacks. Each was a top 12 team in the preseason playoff rankings on NFL.com. If you're Ryan Tannehill's agent, are you answering the phone or waiting for an even better team to lose a starting quarterback? Well, you got to be careful, because you may find yourself at a point where no team in the second half of the season that's worth joining loses a quarterback. I think that the Cleveland situation last year was such an outlier, with Deshaun and that being such a good roster, but Deshaun being such a shitty quarterback and then an injured quarterback. So that was a unique situation. If I were Ryan Tannehill, I would answer the phone for either of them to answer you. Are you answering the phone? Yeah, I always answer the phone. Well, that's not true. I hate answering the phone, but I'm not Ryan Tannehill's agent. I would answer the phone. I would say of the two, if I'm signing with them based on the combination of a chance of winning a Super Bowl and the chance of playing, actually being the reason a team goes to the Super Bowl, I think just based on the nature of the injuries, it would be Miami. And Tannehill's familiar with Miami. That's who drafted him. He knows the city. Green Bay would be fun as hell to go play for. It sounds like Jordan Love's not going to be out too long. He's going to miss this week again. Tua wants to play. But I think if you're asking me, like, okay, which one do I have a better chance of getting on the field for? I'll take the one whose quarterback's brain has been scrambled three times in the last 2 years. And I'm not going to say that if I were Tannehill, I would sit there going to bed at night praying that, you know, Tua land, you know, falls out of bed and lands on his head. I'm not saying I wouldn't do that either. I'm just kind of refraining altogether. But I think both those teams should make the phone call, probably more so Miami. Malik Willis has some talent and actually looked decent. And Matt LaFleur is a good coach. Mike McDaniel's a good coach too. I like LaFleur better than McDaniel. And Skylar Thompson is trash. Trash. So I think Miami seems like a good fit for Tannehill, but I don't know necessarily what Tannehill's looking for. All right, last one. Ryan in the Shug is back. I know that because he put in all caps. We're back. Sean, I'm enjoying the in-season content from both Utopia and Payne and Pendergast. You're killing it. Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate that. I've got a fun one for you. You've probably seen this graphic before. Okay, the graphic he's talking about is one of those graphics where it's a quarterback, and he's made up of several different body parts, and it's like building the perfect quarterback kind of thing. You guys know what I'm, if you're listening to this podcast, you know what I'm talking about. You know, like you're building the perfect receiver, you know, Justin Jefferson's catch radius, Tyreek Hill's speed. And they're pointing at, you know, they put Tyreek Hill's legs on this oddly shaped robot of a wide receiver that's made up of various men's body parts. He's got one that's quarterback related, and it's from a few years ago. It actually takes the Madden score of different characteristics of a quarterback and builds the perfect Madden quarterback, I guess. You guys know what I'm talking about. The categories are throw power, agility, speed, throw on the run, awareness, and accuracy. Okay. So those are all Madden things. The question he has is, which category would have CJ on a current day edition of that quarterback? Like if we were building the 2024 Madden robot quarterback, which of these six categories would CJ be the representative for? I don't think it would be throw power. I don't think it would be agility. I don't think it would be, certainly wouldn't be speed. CJ would admit that. Throw on the run is interesting because, man, can CJ throw it on the run, but I don't think it's that. Awareness, accuracy. Those are the two. Awareness, nobody, very few guys navigate a pocket like CJ Stroud does, man. And then accuracy, man, some of the dimes that he throws. So I'll go with awareness. I'll go with awareness. He says, who would the other categories be? I would say throw power would be Josh Allen. Agility would be, who would agility be? I got to come back to that one. Speed would be Anthony Richardson. Throw on the run would be Patrick Mahomes for sure. Accuracy. God, I want to give CJ both of those. Accuracy. I'm going through all the quarterbacks in my head. I'll give Joe Burrow accuracy. How's that? Maybe even Mahomes on that one too. Agility will go Lamar Jackson since I didn't give him speed. We'll give agility to Lamar. So good one. I like stuff like that. All right, we're done. If you want to get me an email, if you didn't hear your email in that one, apologies. I appreciate you guys sending me your emails. HOUmailbag@gmail.com. I'll be back later this week with a preview of the Vikings game. In the meantime, feel free again to hit that subscribe button. And look forward to talking to you guys later on this week. Appreciate you tuning into this podcast. Appreciate you tuning into Payne and Pendergast. Appreciate you guys. Just period. End of subject. You guys are awesome. See you later this week. Have a good weekend, everybody.